now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation. And I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. Joining me today, man, we got a lot of good people in the building. We having a lot of fun already. Unique got us on the ones and twos, jamming in here. I almost forgot what we came in here to do, man. So big shout out to DJ Unique, man. Big salute to you. Big shout out to everybody in attendance. If you came last week, I appreciate you for coming last week. All my returning people that are here now, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming back out. We are at 632 South Central Avenue here in Hapeville at Blends 2 Cigar Bar. If you're out and you're listening, we're going live on Instagram. Go ahead and pull up on me. Yeah, go ahead and pull up on me, man. And we're going to have a good time. We're going to talk about these games, man. And joining me right now, I got my man Horace. I got my guy Gavin. If you don't know, you've seen these guys before. Gavin has been on the show before. We sit here, we talk, we politic. Horace, Sports Roundtable, his podcast. I've been on his podcast. He's been a part of mine. We've been chopping it up. So I just want you guys to say what's up, man.
Man, what's up? What's up? Can I get some bait ball MJG to get it crunk up in this thing? DJ Unique.
So yeah, we're gonna definitely get it started. What did you take away from the games this weekend, and in terms of spinning it forward to the Super Bowl, does this matchup excite you to watch the Super Bowl?
Well, listen, this lets you know that, in my opinion, that the Shanahan's offense is running the league, because Cincinnati head coach was the quarterback coach for the Rams for 2 years under the McVay system, which is under the Shanahan system. So it kind of lets you know that the Shanahans are running the lead right now as far as their offense is concerned. So that was my biggest takeaway. And it's going to be a matchup of wits of who can run the offense the best in this Super Bowl.
Gav, I'm going to bring it to you, because last week when we was here, man, we had this big debate in terms of defenses, how we ranked our defenses. So me personally, I wanted the Rams defense to be ranked number one of the remaining. But everybody, like the majority of the house, went with San Francisco. They said San Francisco had the number one defense. And in the end, I mean, I guess you could say in terms, considering the fact that the Rams won, you could say that it was that I was right. But how do you see, did you think that the Rams had a stronger defense than the 49ers, or?
I thought the Rams definitely had a stronger defense. They were healthier, for one. Rams, no match for Aaron Donald. No shade to Bosa or none of them boys, man. But Aaron Donald is just something different.
Because he took the game said, over.
Exactly. I mean, he's something different. They don't have a Aaron Donald. The Rams have a Bosa. They can combine Leonard Floyd and my old, what's my guy name, just came from Denver?
Von Miller.
And Von Miller. Like, they can combine and do what Bosa does. Nobody can do what Aaron Donald does. Nobody can do that. That can't be imitated, duplicated. He's a totally different animal.
And now spinning this forward to the Super Bowl, we watched Joe Burrow get sacked 9 times against the Tennessee Titans defense. And now talking about what Gav just said in terms of the Aaron Donald, the entire front seven of the St. Louis, of the L.A. Rams. I think I keep saying St. Louis. Of the L.A. Rams.
I mean, you're just showing your age a little bit. Look,
in terms of the Rams, what we know about the Rams in terms of Aaron Donald, like I said, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, all of these guys, this entire front seven. Is Joe Burrow in for another damn scramble match? Because he figured a way to weasel out away from Kansas City's defense.
Nah, he's going to be running for his life again. But, I mean, it is what it is. He's going to be running for his life again, but it is what it is. I mean, that's how they got here. I mean, they know what they have to correct. They just playing on guts and glory at this point. They got the will, and they making it happen. They're outmatched. They've been outmatched the last three games. I can't name but three defenders on their defense.
Thing about Joe Burrow is that what actually sets him apart is his confidence.
Exactly.
And he sacked nine times. He just kept getting up saying, do it again. Yeah. So whether they get to him or not, it's not like he's going to back down and stop playing. And the thing about it is he has actual weapons.
For real weapons.
He has weapons. And this is the thing. If you look at what
Hold up. Well, we're not going to pretend that the Rams don't have weapons.
They definitely have weapons.
They got weapons, okay, too.
I'm being honest with you.
No, they got weapons, too.
The Bengals' youth is exciting. That's what is exciting to me. The Bengals' youth is exciting. I mean, all their skill guys is 3-4 years into the league.
So,
I think Mixon is their oldest skill guy. Like, that's – and he ain't been in the league for 3-4 years.
So, with that, like – in that same game, you talked about Joe Burrow scrambling for his life. Why couldn't Pat Mahomes do what Burrow did in terms of moving forward in the pocket? Because he seemed like he had all day, and then when the defender decided to run out there to him, instead of kind of making a little move and moving forward toward the line of scrimmage, he opted to spin out and run backwards as if he were playing Tecmo Bowl.
Because they weren't open. Nobody was open. He had, like you said, he had all day. He held the ball for 5-6 seconds every play. That means he has time. Nobody was open.
Pat Mahomes is an artist, and some of his archery just didn't work out this game. Because he had a lot of time, and he got away with it the first time when he threw the first touchdown. The second time, he got careless with the ball and just didn't work out for him. First of all, I think we was crowning Pat Mahomes a little too early. And the expectations you got to do it on that stage for a consistent amount of years, not just a two-year thing. And you see what happened. He had a quarterback rating of 42 in the second half.
And that's one of the things, like I said, my guy sitting right here, Envy, sitting up front, he sent the text out like, yo, I'm tired of everybody crowning all these dudes prematurely right after they won one championship. All of a sudden, they supposed to be some kind of dynasty. Right. So with that, though, like, does this loss diminish what we think about Pat Mahomes?
It doesn't diminish. Absolutely not.
It just lets you know that
he's human and that you can't just keep crowning these guys, because what Joe Burrow has done is beat them twice and on the stage that was the biggest of his life. That he beat them twice and in an AFC championship game at their home field.
I mean, but you still can't. This is 1 year. We talking about 3 years in a row. Pat Mahomes is in it to win it. They are right there at the cusp 3 years in a row. Can't but one team win the championship.
Oh, I agree.
You eliminate
with that.
The Patriots. Yeah, you don't win but one every 40 years. So, like, the on par.
I agree with that. But every time we talk about young quarterback, we was talking about Josh Allen, right. Justin Herbert,
right.
Kyler Murray. But Joe Burrow's name never came up until he went to.
It's just his second year. That's right.
He went to.
Last year he was hurt.
Exactly. And 2 years ago, they were the worst team in the league.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And after an injury, to come back and do this, I mean, he has put his name in the hat. Maybe he has surpassed Justin Herbert and maybe Josh Allen.
Let's slow down and not crown Joe Burrow so quick now.
I'm not crowning him, but I'm just telling you facts of what he's done.
Hey, well, let's talk facts. Pat Mahomes there 3 years in a row. He didn't throw any interceptions in the playoff game.
For those listening at home who can't see, that's my guy, Quaylen Gordon. He's the CEO of Greenwood Whiskey. So salute to him. Cheers to him. He put me onto the smoke Greenwood, which I'm currently partaking in right now. But go ahead, KG. You gonna say
no, I was just saying, like I don't think this diminishes in Pat Holmes at all, right? Like, the guy is a baller. He had a poor second half, true indeed. But he's done things that many quarterbacks who've been in the league for years, who we feel are top-tier quarterbacks, such as Matt Stafford, who never got there. And Pat Mahomes did it early. So I don't think this diminishes anything from Pat Mahomes.
I put it like this. I feel like Aaron Rodgers is one of the best to ever do it. He's never played in three straight NFC Championship games.
Now, I will say I would try to refrain from us, like I said, being prisoner of the moment on a lot of these guys because every week it seems like it's a new king. Whether it's like Joe Burrow is the guy right now. They were all over Josh Allen. They was all, you know, say every week it's a new guy.
At least Burrow is going to the chip. Josh Allen, yeah, was premature. He's never won the big one. He's never gotten to the big one. So that would be totally premature. Everybody else we're talking about has been there or won it.
So now with that being,
that's the difference.
With that being said, what does Joe Burrow have to do to bring home the championship for Cincinnati?
Hold on, before we do that, I wanna put something out there. I just got to do it. Yes, Burrow stepped up, had an amazing year. They going to the chip. Is it him or is it Ja'Marr Chase?
Zach Taylor.
I think it's a combination.
Okay.
I think it's a
Asking. I'm not against either one of them. I love Burrow. I just want to.
But like you said,
just got to throw it out there because I ain't seen nothing like Ja'Marr Chase either.
He has weapons.
He ain't Ja'Marr Chase. He's not Ja'Marr Chase. You look them numbers up. He ain't Ja'Marr Chase. And Justin Jefferson has never been the number one guy. He got Thielen. He ain't getting nobody best corner. But Ja'Marr Chase been number one guy since the day they drafted him.
I mean,
get everybody best
beast.
Corner, and he dogging.
He's a beast.
What was he, second, third in the league in receiving yard this year? Everybody first corner. Like I said,
Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr
Justin
Chase
Jefferson.
Is a cheat code.
Justin Jefferson has
never gotten somebody best. Because they've been teammates.
I agree. I'm not taking that from them.
That's the advantage.
All I'm saying is if you get an 85, if I get a 90, I'm betting you. That don't mean you sorry. It just means I'm betting you.
Hold up. Before the conversation takes off too far left, to answer your question, I think it's a combination of the coach. I think it's a combination of the quarterback, the receivers. And like you said earlier, these dudes are young. All of these guys are early in their career, and it's almost like you don't know that you're supposed to be nervous. You don't know that this is a big game, so you don't get uptight. You don't get nervous. You don't know that, like, oh, I'm supposed
honestly,
to be throwing up all of
like,
myself.
I feel like these guys, everybody, even though they're young, all of them played in the big dance.
They have.
They've all experienced national championship. Only one that didn't play in the national championship was Mixon.
Well, but
everybody,
the Super Bowl
all that other,
is a different animal.
Higgins. Everybody, all their guys have played in the big game and won it.
Yeah, but like I said, the Super Bowl is a different beast. It's a different animal.
Well, I mean, I agree, but pressure is pressure. I mean, some familiarity with pressure. It's people that play in the league. Michael Vick didn't go to the playoffs until he got to college.
But, okay, so back to where I was going with it. What does Joe Burrow have to do to win the Super Bowl?
Continue to do what they've been doing.
He gonna need 40 points.
No.
He got to play a complete game.
I think they need to get the ball out quick to
okay.
slow down the rush. I think that's the game plan that they need to use. Look for Jalen Ramsey to be on Ja'Marr Chase the whole game.
Gab, I bring it to you. What is your level of confidence on a scale of 1 to 10? What's your level of confidence that the Cincinnati Bengals could win this Super Bowl?
Scale of
1
to
10.
That's hard to say, but what I will say is don't be surprised. I'll say that. Don't be surprised if they pull
so
this off.
So is that a 7?
That's a 7.5. They got just as good a chance as the Rams. The Rams, as good as the Rams are, they're faulty as well.
So, once again, we are at 632 South Central Avenue in Hapeville at Blends 2. I encourage you to come out. We got DJ Unique on the ones and twos. We got Greenwood Whiskey flowing. Everybody in the building seems to be on and be a fan of that smoke Greenwood. Yeah. KG put me on it last week, and everybody, Gab came to me and said, what's that you, what's this smoking shit? You know what I'm saying? And so everybody in the building has been asking. Gab, you say you're on number two. So, yeah, man, we're going to be here. The next conversation, we're going to highlight a few businesses. I got some people in the building that I want to reach out to, and I want to I want them to tell you what they do so we can go out and we can support them and celebrate them and get their stuff going out there and be mainstream and so we can all celebrate each other because here it's all about community. You know what I'm saying? It's all about community. A lot of times people get caught up in a name or get caught up in a brand or what everybody else or what you see on television and videos and what a celebrity wants you to buy that you overlook something that's quality that's right in your face. So DJ Unique, go ahead and send us out real quick and we'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Commissioner Gordon.
I'm going to, what I want to do because I want to open the floor back up. I want to go back, my brother Horace over here. I want to bring him back into the front. Also, behind you is my guy Jamie Walker. No Jamie, I don't know if you, I can say I already introduced Horace with Sports Roundtable, but Jamie is also, he does a lot of HBCU broadcasting.
Oh, wow.
He, like, my man is legit with it. You did ESPN Plus, right?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? ESPN with it. So I want to bring this into it. And one of those questions I got for all of you guys is how do you guys feel when you see Josh McDaniels getting another job? You just mentioned Josh McDaniels. When you see some of these other offensive coordinators, but you got Eric Bieniemy, you got Leslie, you got
crazy.
You got all these dudes who all these black guys who are qualified to do the job. They're championship assistant coaches. They're championship offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators. But out of like what well, we had seven, eight jobs come available. I know we had a couple GMs get picked up, but we had no head coaches.
No head coaches.
So like what has to take place in
ownership.
The league?
Ownership.
Ownership?
Ownership has to take place.
Well, you know, with that,
and it's gonna be hard and that's hard because
you'll probably
be better off getting a hotel in Las Vegas than getting a black ownership in the NFL.
Right.
So I had this conversation partially last week, Jamie, and I want to direct this to you because I had a guy tell me that instead of a lot of these guys that are qualified to be NFL head coaches, what we're starting to see, and it is actually turning to fruition, and it is, excuse me, a lot of these gentlemen would go to the HBCU circuit and turn up the HBCU circuit and make their bones there because that's ultimately what they're killing us with is like you don't have the experience or you don't have this or you that. You don't interview well or whatever. So is that an avenue for some of our black coaches?
There's a couple of different schools of thought when it comes to that. Number one, you have coaches that have been in the ranks for years trying to get that spot. And then all of a sudden, they're grabbing a Deion Sanders. They're grabbing an Eddie George because of name recognition and money.
Right, right.
Because they're pulling resources that you wouldn't normally get if you were just, you know, someone that came through the ranks and whatever. Because
I just saw what Grambling got a NIL.
Yeah, Hugh Jackson. Yeah, yeah. That's going to be announced soon. Their NLI deal is bigger. Well, not bigger because we don't know the money yet. But the fact that their whole team is going to get paid is a game changer. And so when you see those kinds of things with people that have been in NFL circles for that long and they can get their entire team paid, because you got to, you know, Grambling itself, you know, they've been in some hot water a couple of times for just practices that they've had. But I think what you have to look at when it comes to professional coaches, there's only been one HBCU coach that has gone from the HBCUs to even Division I, and he was a white guy. You know what I'm saying? Hobson, that went from Alcorn and went to Southern Miss.
Wow.
So pulling from that area, it just depends on what they consider the level of competition being. You got to take this factor. Travis Hunter, number one, you know, consensus, number one, you know, five-star prospect, has seen his ranking drop since he's announced that he's going to Jackson State. Well, you're talking about the games right. They're playing when it comes to HBCUs in general. So if folks that have aspirations of getting into the NFL one day starts in the HBCU ranks, there's no guarantee that they'll rise in that level.
Well, what I want to ask also, I go to Horace with this, is Deion made a splash. Like Jamie was just talking about, Deion made his splash in terms of getting the recruits. Is that next level to maintain your validity to get young men drafted?
Well, Jamie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they've opened up some HBCUs as far as the combine now.
Yes.
To where now that is going to be a game changer. But to go back to the question in hand is, how can we start ownership? How can we really move the needle? It's going to take a situation where all of the superstar black guys in the NFL to just walk off the field one day and just say, I'm not playing, to force the hand of the ownership.
And but when that one person did it, he got scrutinized.
Well, but that's what he was saying. It has to be everyone.
It has to be the superstar. It has to be the black superstar. Now, another caveat to that, if we can get if Jamar Chase don't want to play in the Super Bowl, Joe Burrow will have to speak up.
Right. Right. Right.
I mean, simple as that.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to get some of these.
You need your allies.
You're going to have to get some of these high-profile Caucasians to speak up as well. That's just another avenue. But you're going to have to get them to speak up in a manner of, if you don't have my guy, then I'm not going to be able to perform.
Well, I think that's it. It sounds good in theory, but and I, to all of you, like, it sounds good, but when we have these player reps, these unions, when it comes contract time to sign a whole nother agreement, and the owners come to you and they try to tell you they want player safety and they want to do all of this stuff, but then in the same breath they say we're gonna play an extra game, you know what I'm saying? And you go to the table with the owners and you don't even ask for an extra bye week, you know what I'm saying? You're not unionized enough to ask for some of the things that you really need. Because let's face it, the end of the NFL season this season, it was kind of herky-jerky because it was a lot of guys that were missing. It was a lot of guys that were hurt. And I personally think that could have been corrected with an extra bye week or something that could have been put in place. Maybe you expand the 52-man, 53-man roster to about 58 guys or whatever it is. But all they got out of that was, we don't test for some weed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what your priorities was. Like, you don't care nothing about your health. You don't care about your headaches. You don't care about your concussions, CTE. You just want to smoke weed?
I think you'll get to an NFL one day that will actually legalize it, because I think they're looking for ways now to deal with pain management. And as society is kind of dealing with opioids, I think marijuana will be the next progression that will be totally – you know, not tested at all. But you brought up a good point. Horace brought up a good point as well, as far as the way they deal with and have divided older players and younger players. It's two different priorities when it comes to what they do in the CBA. The younger players are trying to get to that second contract, so they'll kind of take whatever. The older players have been there a while. They're trying to take care of their health, trying to take care of their well-being going forward. And so when you bring up issues that kind of divide up that, the younger players like, man, I don't care what they do. I'm just trying to get to that second contract where the money is. You know, a few years ago, you know, probably, 6 years now, you had younger players that were getting all the money up front.
Right.
And then they changed the style of the contract now, okay, you got to get to that second contract before you get your money, especially if you went in the early rounds, first, second round. Now, you know, that's backloaded. I think Sam Bradford was the last major contract.
Yep.
You know, $50 million up front, he didn't do a darn thing in the NFL.
Stay hurt.
Well, mm-hmm. I think, too, that comes from player reps of your team. I think that comes from the union rep. You got Demoris Smith, where he should convey some of the ideas. Okay, yeah, as a 23-year-old kid, and I say kid because you're fresh out of college or you really haven't been in the NFL long at all. Like you said, you're thinking about that second contract, and you're not thinking about 30-year-old you, 32-year-old you, when you're just sitting on the side of the bed for 15 damn minutes because you can't get up. you know, because your whole body hurt. Or 50-year-old you, where now you've been taking so many hits. It's like, what to say, it's like being, every tackle is like being in like a 35, 45 mile an hour car crash. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys have been in thousands of car crashes. Millions, if you could sit, like you said, like you were saying, in terms of going through Pop Warner, high school, college. And so now you have to take that into consideration. You have to get some of these guys on the same page. And I think as a union rep, you have to get these dudes on the same page. And if Demaurice Smith can't be that guy, then they need to vote somebody in who can kind of get everybody together on the same page, who maybe we don't get all of what we want, but we can kind of get what we all need. And you might be mad at the shit today, but tomorrow when you look at it and you say, man, I'm glad I signed that deal.
They got to get to the point of unifying, because you got to understand Demaurice Smith's background. You know what I'm saying? Civil rights attorney, labor relations type deal. When the league is 70%+ black, civil rights aren't necessarily what you need. You need a dog to go in there and get yours. You need an old player. You know what I'm saying? Gene Upshaw, when he was, you know, leading the players union, negotiated with you know, owners. And the reason being is because he knew what it was like. So there were player advantages with it. Some were still unhappy, but you still need someone that understands how to, you know, that your knees are toe up. I need this. I need that to survive in this league and for it to flourish. And that way the league grew to where it is now. So you got to have somebody that's willing to be that way.
But when we come out, and me personally, I know we just kind of going in reverse about what we talked about in terms of how do we get more black coaches in the league. I'm glad that, like, to look at your perspective of ownership, but I always thought of, like, we have to flood the assistant coaches' ranks. You know what I'm saying? I think we have to get more black offensive coordinators, more defensive coordinators, and then they see that you're winning championships and they see that you're doing these things and they have almost no choice. Because once if you win the Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator and it comes out, let's take Eric Bieniemy for example. I hate how they did him because he's the only offensive coordinator where I ever had it questioned. Does he call the plays? Is Andy Reid still calling the plays? Or, you know, and Andy Reid had to legit come out and stand up for the guy and say, hey, it's been his game plan. These are the things that he's doing. Byron Leftwich. They questioned Byron Leftwich. Oh, he got Tom Brady. Tom Brady is out here. He got full control. If he don't like what Byron is calling, then he's going to brush it off and he's going to call his own play. They don't do that with Josh McDaniels. They don't do that with some of these other guys. And even if you win, they still find a way. And then you hear terms that I hate, like, he doesn't interview well.
He doesn't interview well.
What the hell does that mean? Is he going in there saying, man, fuck y'all, I'm going to do what I want to do, whether you like it or not? Because that is a terrible interview. Although anything less than that, if you're showing your competence, I'm believing that you're putting a decent interview together.
I think with Airbnb, it was more the fact that people were saying, like you said, the interviewing wasn't too great. And then when you're on the sidelines, all you see is Andy Reid calling the plays. Even though he may be preparing the game or whatever, it's like Andy Reid's calling the plays. So, you know, that was one of the things that I noticed that people stood out. Because he was a hell of, what was it, Colorado? He was with Cordell Stewart. Mm-hmm. He was the running back. And he was a hell of a running back. You know, that was the year they shared the championship with Georgia Tech. Was that like 91?
91.
You know, and I feel like, you know, he does deserve an opportunity. And to be honest with you, being I'm a Georgia boy, Atlanta, that was the coach that they were actually going towards at the, you know, before the start of the season. But what ended up happening, they have like some coaches poll they use.
Right.
And they told them that your best chances of winning the ship would be to go with, what's the guy, Smith? What's his first name? Arthur Smith. And, I mean, you know, I don't think that was a bad decision, but I would love to see more black coaches because right now Mike Tomlin got the sweet deal. He can't, you know, the Rooney Rule, and, I mean, Rooney was the owner of the Steelers or whatever, and he's like the third coach in that organization. So I mean, he's a damn good coach also at that. One or two Super Bowls? Is it in the two Super Bowls? One Super Bowl.
Cowher won one. And that's right.
He won. The other guy won. But, you know, Bill Cowher's won one, and then Tomlin won one. But I really do feel like we do need more coaches that look like me and you are qualified to take it to the net. What's the guy? The one that was the coach for the Chicago Bulls that actually went to the Super Bowl and played Caldwell, Lovie Smith,
yeah.
I mean, he got the raw deal in Tampa Bay. Two seasons, and he got out.
So,
and the coach,
Raheem Morris.
Right, man, he should have been a replacement for the Falcons.
Well, and that's the thing, like, we get in and we get a short lease because we get a terrible job. Typically, if a team is looking for a head coach because the team is bad. You know what I'm saying? And that's why, Horace, you made the comment earlier that Byron Leftwich probably go to Jacksonville and lose. You know what I'm saying? Because it's a terrible gig. But does he get that chance to build it up? Does he get that opportunity to get some guys in place? Does he get the GM on his team to where he says, who do you need? What do you need? What is your philosophy? And we're going to move from there and go up from there and then be granted that leniency. Because I'll take it to another level where – we just had a whole thing where we all talked about AB, mental health, AB, walking off on Tampa Bay. And Antonio Brown will tell you, I walked off because coach told me to get the hell off the field. Bro, this is a white dude for as cool and as many Kangos and all that shit that he wears that we think Bruce Arians is, there's still a disconnect. To where if I talk to you, or if I say something to you, you know what I mean. We speak the same language. There's not a barrier there that I can say something to you and you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Maybe Bruce Arians meant get off the field, like go ahead and take your stuff off you done today. And it's received a little differently. But who knows how that's lost in translation. You know what I'm saying? But if you have black coaches and you have a coach that comes in and he says, I can't play because my ankle hurts. And he said, all right, you done today or something like that. Do I have a point or am I wrong in that, Jamie?
There's a lot of stuff going on with that. Reason, Tomlin didn't get along with AB either.
True. Now, AB is a character.
Chad Johnson.
And, right. Yeah. And you do need somebody that – Bruce Arians never wanted AB. You got to understand what happened before then. Tom Brady was the one that got him on that squad. You know what I'm saying? He never wanted AB. He was like, never. Then all of a sudden, Tom Brady said, okay, he can help us. And they went on to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, when it comes to winning, it's something different. Something different. But,
hey, so this is what I got to say about that. My thing is we have to do our due diligence in the media to make sure that we tell the black story.
Absolutely.
Don't go to ESPN and repeat what they say because they gonna carry it on and they gonna be on Bruce Arians' side because right. my question is if Tony Dungy, Leslie Frazier is the head coach of Tampa Bay, do you think AB shows out the way that he does?
I don't believe so.
That's my point.
Right.
So again, if you had a black coach right there, then this never happens. It would not happen. Because the language that Tony Dungy and Leslie Frazier speak,
totally
AB
different.
Understands it.
Right.
But to get it from Bruce Arians, how many times have you had a Caucasian say something to you and you side-eyed because of the way he said it?
Right, right.
And that's basically what happened. The way that he said it. Mm-hmm. It's not what he said, it's the way that he said it.
Yeah.
And that's the narrative because, I think Antonio Brown has – issues. I won't sit here and be like he's misunderstood. He has certain type of issues, but I also think that there are certain ways you can talk to a person and you can relate to a person and you care for a person that you know may have these issues. And if he knows that you are there for him and you down for him, then he's not going to do that. Now, if he knows, like you just said, if he knows that you really don't want me, you really don't give a damn about me,
right.
And I tell you my ankle is hurting, and you just like, fine, get the hell out the field.
I got a question. So, I mean, we look at his antics, right? I think, you know, because my background before I got into like cigar and was working in distribution and stuff like that, I was in healthcare. And I've been in healthcare for like 20 some years, and I'm a first responder by trade.
Okay.
But like a lot of times we do have to look at the roots, as you can say, because his dad was a live wire.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? So like they say the apple don't fall too far from the tree. So, I mean, it's in his bloodline. You know, I mean, yeah, a lot of times when we do have black coaches communicate with other athletes that look like them, they get a better response. But sometimes they could just be an asshole.
And that's true. And that's true. But at the same time, I think a lot of times in the especially in the black community, that we communicate to each other, like, you know who his dad is. Or, you know, that you know. And like you just said, apple don't fall too far. We understand. So I know, like, the days are over where, like, these coaches can say, I treat every player the same.
Right.
You cannot treat every player the same.
No, not at all.
You have to take into account where they come from. And even going as far back to, like, the NFL Combine, when you got these dudes who are sitting here telling you, they sit down in front of a dude and – they calling your mother prostitutes.
Yeah.
They saying all these crazy stuff just to see what arouse you up or how you get mad or whatever. And what does any of this have to do with playing football? You know what I'm saying? So that's the type of stuff that I'm saying. Like, in terms of scouting, we treat ourselves like family. Like, it's become to the point where if you see another black dude, if you see another black dude, and you like the only 2-3 black guys in the area, and then you're kind of gonna come together in a group and have a conversation with each other. But they don't see us as one of them. So what they're gonna do is treat you like property. And if I'm treating you like property, I wanna see what's gonna make you go crazy or what's gonna make you act differently. You understand what I'm saying?
And that's
where this ownership, that's where the general management, that's where the coaching comes into play, to where we need these black coaches to come in and coach these black dudes.
What?
Now, another thing about that is, it seems, now I can be wrong, but we can check the history. It seems that even when the black coaches do get a job, they're set up for failure.
Right.
Yeah. Hugh Jackson was definitely set up for failure.
Steve Wilkes was set up for failure.
Vance Joseph.
Brian Flores.
We can just talk about
all these coaches. All these coaches were set up for failure. So when they do take the job, they're going to say, well, at least we gave you a job.
Yeah.
But you fired him in the first year.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And so my thing is, you got that, and then you have the athletes like an A.B. or a Chad Ocho. As long as they can produce, as long as they can bring eyes to the TV and make money, they'll still give you a chance to play.
And as soon as they feel like your production is low, they're going to get rid of you.
As soon as they feel like
they get rid of
you, as soon as you feel like you're disrespecting the shield, then you out of here.
Yeah, that's when
the thing about it is, it's almost like the Harry Minor rule. Once you screw up and disrespect the shield or the league, then we're going to blackball you for life. So that's the part that's real agitating.
It's wild because you have to, from a full organizational standpoint, you have to infiltrate the entire organization with people of like-mindedness.
Exactly.
You said something that was real important. I think people missed the scouts, the folks that's even looking at players, getting an opportunity to infiltrate an organization where folks understand how to talk to people. You're not in the days where you can just, like, Bruce Arians, you know, put him back in it. He's 70-plus years old.
Right.
People don't understand that, yes, he has done, you know, some wonderful things in relation to bringing in coaches, bringing in just minorities in general that aren't represented in the NFL, women as well. But look at what happened the other day when he hit that kid on the field.
Yeah.
You're not going to hit players anymore. First of all, every NFL player that was interviewed after that said he would have knocked them out.
Right.
Right there on the field. These are not the days where coaches could just do anything to players and they just sit and take it, especially when they're making millions of dollars. I make more money than you do.
Exactly.
You're not going to come at me a certain way. So when organizations you know, have to consider keeping people in that same thought and mind process. You have to understand that you can't do what you used to do back in 70s and 80s. These are new kids that do not mind mixing it up with you, especially considering that their income is a whole lot higher than yours. Right. And so organizations now have to get in the mold to where we got to do this a little bit different. One of the Caucasians that I would point to the most that has kind of adapted is Andy Reid. Crazy enough, I've had discussions with Hugh Douglas about Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. And what I can tell you is he's understanding of your plight, even to a fault in certain situations.
Well, I think with Andy Reid, he doesn't have too many choices, but right. You understand because of the positions that he's
exactly.
been put in and the position that his
kids
were put in.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they talk about his kids had more drugs than Eckert's Pharmacy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Look at his brother.
You said Eckert's.
Yeah, I took it back.
You took it back, bro.
You know what I'm saying? Had more drugs than the pharmacy.
That was before Rite Aid.
So, yeah, I mean, it is amazing. But I do also agree that we have to stop giving the pass of, I heard even with Kyle Shanahan, with D'Amico Ryan and you know what I'm saying? They were like, oh, he got black assistant coaches. He's a good guy. We don't damn know.
No, we don't.
You know what I'm saying? We don't know.
His dad had black assistant coaches.
We don't know. We don't know what he says to the other GM that calls and say, well, tell me about such and such. Tell me about him. We don't know what he says. Because we don't know his agenda.
We don't.
So I think we have to stop giving that pass to say, oh, he's hiring a bunch of people. He's hired a bunch of people because it makes him look better. A lot of times, image is everything. It makes you look a whole lot better. Like I said, Bruce Arians wears a Kango. And this is not me just saying that Bruce Arians is a bad guy because I have no idea. But I'm using him as an example of people think that you may be one way. I've heard stories about Bill Belichick being a totally different guy.
Yeah, outside of, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And we don't know. Everybody says he comes to the media, he gives you bland, one word, two couple sentences or whatever, answers. But when you see him, he's a funny guy, he's going outgoing, he genuinely cares about you, your family, and all of that stuff.
And he treats everyone the same.
Right.
In most circles. There were stories about him cussing Tom Brady out.
Right, right.
Just to prove a point to the rest of the team. I can deal with somebody like that.
Yeah.
Because at least I know how you coming at me. And you coming at them too.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he dealt with superstar players back when he was an assistant with the Giants.
With the Giants.
You know, they said that, you got to think about that defensive side who was right. on that, who played Lawrence Taylor.
Banks.
Carl Banks.
Yeah.
You talking about him having to deal with that as a young assistant. So he knew what the get down was. So he said, okay. He didn't necessarily like to handle star players, but he said, okay, I can push and pull and who it do it with. It's a psychology to coaching anyway that people have to understand.
And everybody buys in when you're winning.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
when you'll take more things. I think that's part of the reason, kind of flipping it over to the NBA, I think that's part of the reason why Pop lasted as long as he did, because he was winning. Nobody thought Pop was funny when he look at, like, you know, you go on during the halftime report, they running in, they ask him about the defense, and he says some kind of crazy-ass answer. It wasn't really funny, but because he was the Spurs coach, and he has had a history of winning, and he, like you said, Tim Duncan, I could treat Tim Duncan the same way I treat Steven Jackson. And you're gonna do the same thing. Everybody going is treated the same. But if you're losing, then you just an angry ass old man.
Mm-hmm.
If you're winning, it becomes accepted, and that's just Pop. You know, that's just Belichick. That's just Bill being Bill. That's just those guys.
Now, I will say this. What else is a strike? And this is, I'm teetering on some things where, to me, like, let's look at Mike Tomlin. As much as I love him in Pittsburgh, he's never hired a black defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator. He's always just hired assistants. That in itself, we got to help ourselves. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't he reached out to Leslie Frazier to be his defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh?
So, yeah, and that's the thing. We have to help each other.
We got to be village-minded.
And I think partially it turns into a fact of we want someone to give us something, and we have to be willing to work and fight for it. And I bring that back to the union situation, because if you're not willing, if you're so desperate for a dollar, they understand that's how they can control you.
Mm.
So if I tell you that if you don't report to camp, if you don't show up in beyond these doors today, I'm going to find you $100,000 a day or whatever it is, then you're going to show up to work, because everybody in your family is depending on you. If you look at most of the guys that are in the NFL, it's not like basketball. Most basketball players are coming from, like, middle-class families. But a lot of the football players are coming from poor-income families because they're doing what it takes to get out of that hood, to get out of that neighborhood, to get out of that environment. Whether you look at some of the players and they're telling you, oh, well, I was one of the kids that, you know, that was allowed to not be in the gang because I was super fast, or I could catch and I could run or whatever. They're getting – so you look back and everybody depends on you. So in that, and with a lot of these guys, that goes to the crazy questioning that we were just talking about. They start talking about your family, asking you questions about your family, and they know that you can't afford to sit out a day in your life. Because if you sit out, mama's missing house payments, your sister missing car payments, everybody's looking forward to what you can do for them, and you got having everybody on your back, you can't afford to say, well, I'm going on strike. Mm-hmm. What you going to do?
And that's the number one selling point when it comes to keeping players attached to whatever the league decides to do. That's the number one. Secure the bag. I'm paying you this amount of money. You said I got to be on strike for how many weeks? Now all of a sudden it's striking is not the only thing we can do. You know, the narrative all of a sudden changes. So the reason, even with the Rooney Rule,
it's a joke, man.
They should just cut it out.
Yeah,
because now it's making a mockery of folks. You just, you know, interview a couple of people, you know, in house, and right. I fulfill the Rooney Rule obligations. Now I want to hire who I want to hire. The only way to do it is to start from the ground level up, and that is to, like I said, infiltrate organizations with coaches, with personnel people. But even within that, man, you just got to monitor it. They just, you know, Chicago just hired a black GM, former
right.
player,
right.
but he didn't even get a chance to hire the coach. See, everybody was like, all right, what happened? What he didn't have a chance to. He got hired. He got interviewed the same time as the coach did, and before he even came on the job, they ended up hiring the dude from Indianapolis,
right?
You know, to be the new head coach. Mm-hmm. So they play these games that people don't understand, and it makes you just question the entire league. It's gonna take what Horace said initially, and that is a full-scale buy-in
yes.
of boycotting the league so, in order to make significant change.
Commissioner Gordon.
Horace, I want you to tell us about that SRT.
Yeah, man, Sports Roundtable, man, live 7 o'clock each and every Wednesday, 1100 a.m. Check us out on Facebook, SRT Sports Talk Radio. Make sure you go to Facebook. We live each and every week.
And, Jamie, tell us how we can follow you real quick.
Man, you can – wow. Twitter, Sport Voice JW. Doing – let me see – Black College Sports Network, ESPN+, whatever network there is that has me either do play-by-play or color, I'm on. You can follow me on Instagram at coachwork_media. And just look out, man. I'm at a game near
legend,
you.
Man. He a legend.
Oh, yeah. And I want to extend to all of you an open invite. As long as I'm here doing this, man, you can come up. You can pull up. We can chop it up. I love talking. We do this all the time, man. I love talking to you guys, man. And I want to extend an open invitation to everyone here. Come out. If you know it's Monday and you see a flyer, you know it's up. Hey, come on out, come through. We're going to have a good time. 632 South Central Avenue. I've been saying it all night. 632 South Central Avenue, Hapeville, Georgia, Blends 2 Cigar Bar. I want you to come out. I thank everyone for being a part. I want to thank Greenwood Whiskey. I thank DJ Unique. I thank everyone that joined us, whether it was Gavin, whether it was the young ladies with their businesses. Jay Reesky. Much love, brother.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, it's a pleasure.
Definitely.
And I will be here, God willing, next Monday.
So until next week, I'll holler.
Peace.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, bye.